Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs. Oh! Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chasedown Podcast, part of the Kaz Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. We've got some dogs in this house. The Cleveland Cavaliers show incredible toughness and beat the Boston Celtics. But before we get that, I have to mention that support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects, and connecting with me now via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'll tell you who collaborated well last night, the Cavaliers defense. Storm back from 19 down.
Yes.
Beat the Boston Celtics, who I will hate forever. That's what I've learned. There's just something about them. I just hate them. And those late 2000s wounds don't ever heal, man, because I still hate them like I hated them back then.
And it
felt so good to come back and just like kind of just take control of that game. And it was such a weird comeback, man. Like they just kind of through sheer force of will and long limbs and activity just started pressing the Celtics into mistake after mistake after mistake. And like, if you're a Celtics fan and your former hero coach, now turned hero GM, Brad Stevens, said you didn't need a real point guard, it's like, well,
yeah, the need of a point guard is pretty obvious for that Celtics team. And the funny thing about the comeback is it's not like everything was going the Cavs' way, right? Like, I hate talking refs. I usually like to talk about them as a force
terrible.
Of nature. But that was probably the worst officiated game, like from a one-sided perspective, that I've watched in a while. Like, it's a shame that if you win your challenge, you can't use a challenge again, because the Cavs had call after call go against them down the stretch. No calls on the offensive end, guys driving into the lane and getting hacked to death, which we've seen this season, but it just wasn't consistent on both ends of the floor. So the fact that they were able to rise above that adversity to not get too rattled by the calls, even when a vet like Ricky Rubio gets rattled, you had the young guys helping him out there with Garland and Jetty Osmond embracing him, as Jimmy Longo captured so well. But man, it was just such a fun game. It wasn't fun to start, but that comeback and seeing that on the third game in four nights, which both teams were in that situation, but it was the younger team that showed the toughness and adversity versus the more veteran Boston Celtics.
Yeah. I mean, this just isn't your dad's Cavs team, man. This is a team that, we've said it a lot, there's so many times where we would have seen them wilt, mm-hmm. Under this kind of adversity, and they shouldn't have won this game.
No,
in a way that, like, you know, like, just they weren't playing well. The refs weren't in their favor. You really felt the lack of offensive punch
in a way that was really reminiscent of the Raptors game, right? Like, right, yeah. Down to Garland drawing the free throws to ice the game and give them the chance to win, right? Like, both of those games are against teams that the Cavs are trying to jump in the standings, right? Like, I understand that they're below them right now. A lot of teams are. But those are teams that have more experience, that have more depth. And for the Cavs to do this down three of their top eight just continues to astound me. Like, it's funny. And some of the PTSD from that Washington game kicked in, especially with that Tatum push off, because I really feel like that Washington game would have been a Cavs win if, when Okoro got undercut, they correctly called a foul there and he's shooting free throws rather than the wide open three that followed. That alone would have changed things. Forget if Okoro was in there to play defense down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what you would probably say is, like, you know, the Cavs have now stolen two games they shouldn't have stolen. So,
but I'm getting greedy. We could have had the best record in the East if that one call goes our way.
Given one up, you know, I think is probably okay. They're 4-1, I believe. Our good friend Eustacio Rowley tweeted, Fear the Sword friend. I think he said they're 4-1 in one possession games so far this year.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, like, I mean, I'm trying not to, You know, I'm trying to count my blessings as much as possible, but it was just such a fun game. And I, you know, it's funny. I checked the box score. I couldn't believe Jetty was only 3 of 9.
That doesn't feel right.
Like he had at least 47 points.
You know what? It really crystallized when I was watching that Jetty step back three. But my God, did I miss having fans in the crowd? Like, that was definitely a game that I don't think you win in an empty gym or just the 200 plus people that they were allowed to have last season. The crowd was so into it, and there's nothing like a Romo Fijo that's fully engaged during a comeback, man. Like, there were so many moments that, like, the crowd was just exploding, and the energy was nuts. The Jetty step back three was incredible. When Jetty got the steal, dished it down to Rubio, who found Mobley streaking through the paint for the dunk. That was huge. Rubio's no look lob to Allen in crunch time. Like, all of those moments were just so memorable and so much fun. And man, I'm this Cavs team is doing things for me, man.
Yeah, I mean, it just seemed like a game that they should. I mean, well, it didn't seem like they shouldn't have won. So, like, just the fact that everyone is kind of just picking each other up on this team right now. You know, like, Isaac has had a nightmare couple games, and somehow it hasn't killed this team. Everyone's still engaged. I really felt like Darius had to do the heaviest lifting of his season so far in terms of just generating looks.
Because Rubio had a
weird, because Rubio had kind of a weird game scoring. I mean, 4 of 17 isn't weird. It's just bad. You know, but I mean, he did get 6 free throws and hit a couple threes that helped his efficiency numbers. But like, no one really played great except Mobley and Darius.
Yeah.
But everyone had little bursts of great that like got them over the hump. Like Jetty finishing in transition in a way that was really, really impressive. On a play, and you know, picking off, you know, playing passing lanes, getting a couple steals, a block, you know, Rubio with a absolute master stroke, oop to Jared Allen, really. And I think that if you really look at that play, Evan Damerl, friend of the pod, friend of just us, tweeted out his view from Media Row. And one, Ricky never looks at Jared at any point on that play. And it's just a masterwork in manipulation. That's like, that's just straight veteran savvy.
Yeah.
Because Mobley got Schroeder switched onto him, and then, you know, the Celtics are the best team in the league at tagging people out. That is what, something they've always killed the Cavs with, is the Cavs get an advantage, and then all of a sudden they've got a way better fit on the off ball mismatch in a second. Mm-hmm. So Ricky knows that. Literally locks eyes with Mobley, is pointing, gesticulating, telling him to get to a certain spot. Smart goes for the tag out, and immediately Ricky no look oops Jared Allen, and it's just a thing of beauty, and I love to see that.
I do too, and I think a lot of credit needs to go to JB Bickerstaff, because you look at this early season run and how prepared this team is. That's on the coaching staff, not just JB Bickerstaff, but the entire staff. And the level of buy-in is really evident. And even from earlier in the season, when there were fewer injuries and the Cavs were only going 8 deep, and we said, hey, like that's probably not something that's sustainable. You have even more injuries now, Colin Sexton out for an undetermined amount of time. And someone like Denzel Valentine comes in, and yeah, he took some Denzel Valentine like shots. He's never going to be shy to shoot. He got his 7 threes up. But I thought he played really good defense on Jason Tatum. Like, I thought he actually had a real positive impact in the game. I wouldn't count on him being a permanent fixture in the rotation in any way, but just from that next man up mentality, right? When you need someone to eat some minutes in your third game in 4 nights, and to have Valentine come in and do a good job on Tatum and help kind of be a part of that comeback, I think deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, it's funny because he checked in. I went, man, is he really giving Valentine the run? I was like, oh wait, he's got nobody else. Yeah. Like, he's man is out of healthy bodies at the 3-4 at the, you know, 3-4 swing. And if he wants to play 9 men, which I like that he's kind of committed to, It had to be a Valentine. Now, I do think he stuck with him a little longer than he needed to.
Yeah, probably.
And I was surprised Dylan got taken out because I thought Dylan was playing really, really well. But, you know, like the fact of the matter is, like, you know, proof's in the pudding, plus nine in his 23 minutes. And he was a really valuable minutes eater, especially on a night where Okoro just didn't have it going, you know, mm-hmm. It's hard to play a 9-man rotation, keep people's minutes down on, you know, in a team like this with as many people banged up, even worse when you can only play Isaac 18 minutes because he's having a really rough offensive game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard to be upset with any decisions JB made in a game that they won. They, again, had no business winning.
Yeah, and especially because we have no idea who's participating well in practice, who's earning those minutes in the times that we don't see, right? And, I mean, from a Dylan Windler standpoint, I thought he played really good team basketball the last two games. But one thing I'm noticing is he's passing up those open threes. Like, when he first came in in his first stretch this season, he was just pulling, right? Like, he was not shy to take those shots. And now this has kind of been a symptom we've seen without the Cavs having consistent penetration from Colin Sexton and whatnot. There are times where that kick out pass goes to the perimeter and we just see a little bit too much overpassing, right? Where guys are looking to get the perfect shot rather than a good shot. And I think for someone like Dylan Windler, if you want to make the most of this opportunity with Sexton out, you need to be assertive. You need to take all of those open shots. And I don't know if that factors into the decision-making, but it is something that I've noticed these last two games.
Yeah, I you're not wrong. There have been a few times where they've had an advantage. And, like, I will say they're not wide open shots he's typically passing up.
No.
Because of the fact that the Cavs are so short on people who can really hurt you off the dribble right now,
mm-hmm.
I feel like teams are closing out with a little extra oomph. And there have been some times where I've really liked the ball movement that the Cavs are kind of exhibiting, and there's just no openings because yep. teams are playing good, smart defense in these last two games where, you know, you just thought that you were going to have a look, and, you know, both Boston and Detroit are kind of stocked with big athletic wings mm-hmm. that can cover ground really quickly. And sometimes the opportunities just weren't there. So, like, I don't know if Windler's been gun shy as much as, like, you know, like, just knowing the situation they're in, he might have to take some pretty contested ones, like right. on a crazy closeout.
I don't think he's passing up wide open looks. I think he's passing up what would be good looks for him, or at least looks that we saw him take before. So it's not a big criticism. I thought he played good minutes, but that's something that I'm keeping my eye on because, I mean, the reality is with Colin Sexton out, this is an interesting opportunity for guys, right? Like, it's going to force Darius Garland to be more assertive. I think we've seen that. It's going to force Isaac Okoro to try to expand his offensive game, struggles or not. I think it's important for him to be assertive in these stretches, right? Like, if he has an open shot, take it. If the defense isn't respecting your shot and it comes off of good ball movement, take it. I think the pressing is a little bit much, but we saw even in summer league, right, when Evan Mobley was asked to do a little too much without the supporting guys around him, he took that experience, he took those struggles and added 13 pounds, really worked on his game and came into this season in better shape. And I think understanding, okay, I have to take a bigger role, I'm not ready for it, you go through those struggles, I think it helps identify what you need to work on and is good for the long-term growth. Because ultimately, like, if Sexton does come back and it's not as long, let's say it's 6 weeks, which I think we're all hoping that he comes back sooner rather than later. If that's the case, and in that time, Garland becomes a little more assertive, he becomes a little more comfortable. Maybe Lauri Markkanen gets going once he's back in the rotation. Evan Mobley finds a little more assertiveness as a scorer. Right now, he's averaging about 20 points per game in his last five, which is absurd. But if all of that happens, I think you get a really good call on Sexton when he comes back, because historically speaking, Sexton plays well when Garland's assertive. He scores pretty well all the time, but when Garland had big games, Sexton played well off of him. And I think especially with the growth that we've seen him show off ball this year, I think adding him into the mix with guys being more comfortable with them, being more assertive and having that experience without him, I think that's going to be a huge benefit, because we saw the inverse of that last season with Garland out, where Sexton had the opportunity to work on his playmaking, and I think it paid real dividends.
Yeah, I think, I think on the Sexton conversation, I want to be a little more aggressive than you're being. Because I think there is a subset of Cavs fans that there's a subset of Cavs fans that were sure the team would be much better without him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're pretty comfortable saying that's not true.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I do think there is some degree of, and I was already comfortable saying there, but I did feel like this injury was something of a litmus test for that take, you know, mm-hmm. like if he really is empty calories, then we really shouldn't feel his absence that much, you know?
Yeah.
And I definitely have felt his absence these last couple games. Yes, the Caps are still winning. So like, you know, you don't want to say like, oh, they're screwed without him. But with that said, they're winning in, they're having to work really hard for their wins, you know, like, and you know, you could argue that, hey, they're playing bigger guys defensively on the wings, so their defense has been better the last couple games. I still don't think it's been worth the offensive trade-off that they lose just from a bucket getting perspective. Like, there's just so many times in that game last night, I was like, can we just get a bucket? Like, just right. some, like, it broke, the play broke, and we're asking people who aren't quite qualified to do it to do it. So like, you know, I definitely am eager to see Colin come back and continue, because again, I don't really think he's been this ball stopping problem for this team this year. I've actually loved the way he's been playing for this team this year. So like,
frankly, Okoro has stopped the ball more times in the last two games than I think Sexton has all season. Like, was still playing at the same usage that he has in the past this year, right? Like, his usage rate was still up around 26%. He was still using a lot of those possessions. Yeah, he doesn't have the same playmaking responsibilities with Garland and Rubio there, but he was still getting a lot of touches. But he kept the ball moving, right? Like, it all felt like it was within the flow of the offense.
Yeah, and like the thing with Isaac, and you know, I know we like to poke fun at the Dunked On boys, but they came up with a term I just love, which is the record scratch, which is offense generates an advantage, kicks over to an offensive player who is not really up to snuff, and they just freeze.
Yeah.
and the defense resets, record scratches, and the offense has to start all over again. Lot of record scratches with Isaac. So it's like, so I mean, I do think we should have the Isaac discussion. I know this is a fun, happy podcast, but it is worth having because he looks pretty lost out there offensively right now. He is because like you would love for it to be one of two things. Either he's too aggressive and needs to settle in to his game, or he's not aggressive enough and he's just letting, you know, he's causing those record scratches by just kind of resetting. And the problem is both right now.
Yeah, it really is.
He is both stalling the offense when he's not aggressive. And then when he is aggressive, it's been really ugly, Justin. I don't know if he is still recovering from that hamstring injury. I know those are big athleticism sappers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to push the panic button just yet. Until we're sure he's fully healthy. And, you know, frankly, I mean, he's still a young guy, and young guys with limited offensive skill sets have really bad stretches.
Yeah.
But with that said,
he's 3 months older than Evan Mobley, basically, yeah. Right? Like, but, very few guys come in as polished as Mobley at that age.
Yeah. But I will say, I think this is the worst, like, 2-3 game stretch of his career so far.
I mean, offensively, I completely agree. I just think he
looks very lost and frustrated. You can sense it in his body language. Mm-hmm. He is getting, like, every time he attacks the lane, it is like, it's not just a block. It is a dent the backboard. It got blocked so hard block. and, you know, I will say I'm a little worried about him. But I'm not ready to panic yet. I do want to give him some time to play through this, make sure he gets fully healthy. But to that end, if you thought the plan was going to be Isaac is the new starting two moving forward, that's not happening right now.
Right. And that was always the big thing that we had with the Sexton thing, right? Like, is, okay, you feel like maybe he's a second unit guy. Someone has to go there and earn that spot, which hasn't occurred. And I think Okoro was playing great defense. I think you look at what he did on Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum.
He'll get skinny on screens and is really working his butt off the whole time. It's just if your offense is struggling this hard, it is hard to justify significant minutes once the team is healthy.
Yeah, and
especially since they're 9-5. Like, you can't, if you're trying to win games right now, the guy's got to kind of get over the hump and perform. And, you know, I'm rooting for him. I do think that by all accounts, a lot of people thought a breakout year was coming for him, coming from camp. And from Summer League, and everyone says he's Sexton-esque in how hard he works on his game and how much he loves basketball. So,
which is why I'm not writing him off.
I'm betting he will figure it out, but right now it's a little rough, and the Cavs kind of have to endure his minutes on offense. So when they're playing that starting lineup of Garland, Okoro, Wade, Mobley, and Allen, there's just not a lot of punch offensively, and they're going to have to win games on the defensive end.
Which is why I'm really curious to see what it looks like when Lauri Markkanen comes back, because the drop off, like I think Wade's played very admirably. He's doing his thing out there, but the drop off from Lauri to Wade is rather steep, right? And I think when you get that punch of a Lauri Markkanen, it might allow Okoro to settle into a role he's more comfortable with. I think another thing that deserves to be shout out with Okoro is one of the kind of complementary skills that we were hoping would develop with him appears to, which is the fact that he's rebounding well. He was not a good rebounder as a rookie, and the fact that he's actually going out there and securing some of those boards, I think, is important, especially for how poor this team has been rebounding the ball this season. But I totally agree. Like, it feels like he's pressing. There doesn't seem to be the confidence. The jumper looks a little flatter than usual. So I'm very curious to see how this progresses, because, I think it's a really good experience. Ultimately, like, if this was a season where we had like championship aspirations, I'd be panicking and saying, okay, maybe we need to find a temporary solution with Sexton out at shooting guard. But I mean, this is still about development, right? Like, these guys getting those reps, figuring out what they can and can't do, what they need to work on. That's all really, really important, because
the thing is, the more games you win, Justin, the less it becomes about development.
I don't necessarily agree. I mean, really don't.
Whether you agree or not, I don't know if JB will agree, because the man's like, I'm on a roll. Mm-hmm. Like, and he did it last night. He said, Isaac, it's not your night. 18 minutes.
Well, I still think that that's important. Like, I'm not saying you're playing him 36 minutes no matter how he's playing.
I don't think either of us are saying he should leave the rotation.
Right. I'm just saying, like, the accountability, that internal competition, that's all really positive, because despite how sometimes the conversation online can go, these guys aren't actually competing with one another. There's more than enough minutes for everybody, and the development of the group. Like, let me ask you this, Carter. When you bench someone in fantasy, when you bench a receiver in fantasy, are you hoping that guy has a bad game or a good game? Like, do you want that to justify your decision by that guy having a bad game? Or do you want him to play well, so you're like, you know what, when I do go to him in the future, I feel good?
I'm a grown up, so the latter. If you're mad that your bench players are playing well, you're an idiot. You should be mad at your starters for not playing well.
See, I still sometimes revert to, I don't want this guy on my bench to go off, because then I'm going to feel like a big idiot. And that's an impulse I know I have to fight, because that is by far the stupider way to approach that. But you know what? Sometimes it happens. And I think that can occur with the development of young players, right? Like, we feel like there's only so many reps. There's only so many touches. So when Sexton's out, you want Okoro to play really well, and you want there to be some correlation, when at the end of the day, like, these guys are competing with themselves, right? Like, Darius Garland right now is competing with his natural tendencies to pass the ball, right? Isaac Okoro is trying to find that balance. Like, they're not in competition with one another. They are trying to take that next step in their careers. And when they do that, it benefits the collective.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I do think culturally that is the case right now. I think everyone's just trying to be the best version of themselves on this team and trying to find their way to minutes.
And speaking of that, you know who's finding the best versions of themselves? Evan Mobley and Darius Garland Carter. It's looking awfully leapy in here. Over their last five games, Evan Mobley is averaging 19.6 points, 7.4 rebounds, over two assists, almost two blocks, 59% from the floor, 43% from three, shooting three a game. Garland, almost 20 points per game, six assists, over a steal a game, 52% from the floor, 43% from three, shooting seven threes a game. Those two have been balling out, and I just can't say enough about Evan Mobley. Like, the assertiveness that he's showing and, like, the improvement he makes game from game and the way that he capitalizes on opportunities, the juice he's showing as a scorer is absurd. This should not be happening this early in his career, and I think even an optimist like myself has to say, holy crap, is this guy ahead of schedule?
He is really the aggressiveness.
Causing you to yawn?
Yeah, stop. It's in the morning. Shut up. It is the aggressiveness and the fearlessness with the way he attacks is really exciting. I mean, that pull-up jumper over Robert Williams, the 18-footer or so that he hit, going straight into Tatum's chest for a post-up, that's not an easy bucket, you know? Like, Tatum's definitely stronger than Evan Mobley right now. And he just plays with a lot more, like, nasty than I thought. Like, he has a bit of an attitude offensively, you know? Like, he's got I just kind of thought we were getting, like, Jaren Jackson Jr., to be honest. Like, a guy who floats a little more than what we get. He's very intentional with what he does on the offensive end of the ball. And it really forces defenses to kind of bend to him as opposed to him being just a supplementary piece. I thought we were going to get a play finisher much more than a play starter early in his career. And then summer league happened and the handle wasn't really there. And by the way, it still really isn't there. It's not really the way he's scoring.
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, he's just going to be a lob threat in a spot up guy, a pick and popper. And he is just really getting good at finding those spots to attack. And it's really, really encouraging for his long-term future because, you know, the whole book on Mobley was he's not probably in a one on a championship team. He's probably the best version of a number two. And when you see him attacking like this, you go, maybe he's just a one, you know, like maybe he's just a one, 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 one. And when you have that on your team as a rookie and a guy who's just fearless like that and still playing in control, still playing at the right pace, he's never rushed. It's just hard not to glow about it because it's just so uncommon.
Yeah, and who knows? Like, maybe he's not going to be the leading scorer on that type of a team, but you can absolutely see how he'd be in that mix, right? That he can be, the potential is there for him to be a dominant offensive player. And it's funny because so many of kind of the swing hypothetical traits that we said with Mobley are already apparent, right? Like the fact that he is able to score in this way, just how good his defense is without fouling and having that transition to the NBA, like that is absurd. There are still some things he needs to work on. He is hilariously bad at setting screens at this point. I think that's why you see a lot of kind of double drag action where he slips and Allen is setting the real screen. And there are still times, actually, both he and Allen, I think sometimes are a little loose with the ball. Their hands aren't great in transition. I think Garland and Rubio. Have at least one or two turnovers a game that are basically giving the ball to Mobley or Allen, and they just kind of bobble that pass. But with all that being said, this guy is so ahead of schedule. He's already better than a Jaren Jackson Jr. It's looking scary just how damn good he is. And I gave the hot take. The listeners of the podcast will know how much this means coming from me, but I genuinely think that he is the best rookie that the Cavs have drafted since LeBron. And I think Kyrie is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's my favorite player to watch ever. Everyone knows
better.
It's dude,
he's like, Duncan-esque, man. He's Duncan-esque.
And when Kyrie came into the NBA, like, obviously there wasn't the same supporting cast that Mobley's coming into and whatnot. And that's what made, like, his offensive output so impressive, right? Like, the polish he showed as a rookie was absurd. Mobley is showing offensive polish while also being all defensive team good. Like, this should not be possible, and it's even harder to imagine at this position. Like, this position historically comes with a larger learning curve, and the fact that he is picking things up every single game, this dude's a supercomputer. That's the only explanation, right? Like, this is a guy that was obviously coached incredibly well coming up. It probably helps to have his dad being a coach, drilling him of everything that he needs to learn, what reads to make. He's apparently an animal in the film room and whatnot. He and Darius Garland are close friends off the floor already. I love that. Like, everything seems to be hitting with him right now, and this just, it could be a more fun time to be a Cavs fan. Like, this is already been one of my most enjoyable seasons.
It's hard to think of a time I've had more fun than this on a night-to-night basis, because it's still in the honeymoon period. And this is something, and we've said this a lot, we didn't get to have this with the Kyrie Cavs.
No,
we didn't get to have this year. We had the LeBron ascendant, so up to, you know, 2007 was amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that year where they, you know, all of a sudden were in the finals was like, whoa, that was, you know, that was a true, like, unexpected rise.
Yeah.
And then from there, the pressure was on, and then LeBron leaves and they're terrible. Then they're finally starting to build up some young folks, though. I mean, I'm not quite sure where that was going, but then they immediately get LeBron and trade for Kevin, and then the pressure's back on again immediately.
Right.
Like the Cinderella year will always be the most fun year, guys. Mm-hmm. So we've said this a few times, and I don't love telling fans how to fan, but some unsolicited advice is have some fun. Make sure you're having fun right now, because I can tell you right now, other than winning the title, this is the most fun it is to be a fan, in my opinion. When your team totally is better than it should be, and they're catching everyone off guard, and you're starting to fall in love with some of these players that, you know, that you've been kind of investing in the past couple years, mm-hmm. and you're falling in love with the team's culture and their vibes, and there's not this cloud of expectations hanging over them. So I hope that everyone is having as much fun as we are right now. Because, like, it's funny, we can wring our hands about Isaac or about Colin's future or whatever, but, like, I hope that that's always, like, in the background. Because up mm-hmm. front is a team that clearly loves each other.
Yeah.
Clearly is building that culture. I mean, they're freaking barking at half court after they win, after they win a game. I'm sure the Celtics were like, Jesus Christ. you know, they are young. They are talented. And, like, it just, this is the time where the sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. And I cannot overstate just how much fun this has been as a Cavs fan.
Yeah. And to me, the most fun part too is that it's coming within the larger context of, okay, this is still a team that owns all their future picks. They have a bunch of young guys that are nowhere close to their ceilings right now. Like, Garland's 21, Mobley's 20, Sexton's 22, Okoro's 20. Like, Jared Allen is a top 10 center, and he's 23 years old. Like, we might have franchise players at the point guard, power forward, and center position. Like, that's very possible if these guys continue on their current trajectory. And that is not even factoring in Colin Sexton, who was scoring like an all-star last season, who historically has played really well off of Darius Garland. This is a really, really good position to be in, and the upside of what this core can be is really exciting. And the wins early in this season are great, but I'm not really letting it shift the expectations for me too much. Like, I I still, like, my hopes and feelings are beyond this year, right? Like, if they end up getting the 9 seed and that's kind of the turnout of this season, and you get a late lottery pick or whatever the case may be with that 9 seed, assuming you don't win the play-in, like, I'm still going to consider that a successful season.
That's still a so it's one of those things where I think that it's kind of two conversations, isn't it? Like, it's what defines a successful season? And like what
is there a proof of concept for the long term, right?
But then there's also, like, we've now seen some real signs of the heights this team could get to this season.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't think
it's on the verge. It's on the verge of me changing some expectations for myself personally. And you look at this upcoming stretch, which I'll just rattle off for you. So Boston, Brooklyn, Golden State, Brooklyn, Phoenix, Orlando, thank goodness, Dallas, Miami, Washington, Utah, Milwaukee, Chicago. That is a brutal, 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 brutal 12-game stretch. I think the only positive thing you can say about it is a lot of those are coming at home, at least over this next 2 weeks to close out this month. But that is just awful. Like,
here's the upside, by the way. If they go 4-8 in that stretch, if they steal two games they shouldn't win,
mm-hmm.
They are 13-13.
Yeah. And
like, that's why this stretch was so important.
Yeah, that's why this 9-5 start is massive, because to get to 9-5 is absurd when you look at the schedule that they went through to get here, when you factor in the guys that they're missing. If they are 500 after this next 12-game stretch, that is huge. Like, I think at that point you start talking about playoffs versus play-in, because at that point, like, you're going to have one of the easiest schedules the rest of the way. You're going to get progressively healthier. You're going to see internal improvement throughout the year. So that's what this next 12-game stretch is. Like, as you said, if they go 4-8, that is huge. If they do better than that, oh my goodness, like, we are going to be arrogant, we are going to be out of control, and it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
I have highlights from the game on if you're watching YouTube, and I know this is not on topic, but that Jetty transition layup was perhaps the most skilled move of his career. That was insane. I was like, there is no chance this is going in.
I've got to say, it's kind of fun for Jetty to go from being asked to do way too much for multiple years to kind of finding his footing and finding that perfect role with this team. Because, I mean, we loved rooting for Jetty, right? Like, it was a lot of fun. And he's someone
and
that we
got
felt
not
could contribute.
Fun, and that stunk.
Yeah, it got not fun. And he's someone that can contribute. And the funny thing, too, is he's showing you what you can do when you have a wing that is capable of shooting and initiating a little bit of offense. The highlights just show that Jason Tatum push off that wasn't called. So my blood is boiling once again, because my God, did they get every single call? But yeah, when it comes to Jetty, like, just having a guy that is capable of putting the ball on the floor, hitting some shots, can run the odd pick and roll or two, like, it's such an advantage to this team. And it's not like he does it at a super, super high level, but you just see with the talent that they have at the other positions, having
just
somebody
enough
with that skill set makes such a big difference.
Just enough. And at 6'8", just enough of that skill is enough, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, Ime Udoka after the game said that they were looking to pick on Jetty, and him getting the stop and not a fake stop either. You know, it wasn't one of those, well, he got cooked, but the guy's having to miss the shot.
Right.
Like, he was in Dennis Schroeder's grill. And it was just really, really, it's just really encouraging to see, man. Cause like, mm-hmm. again, like, that's why you take swings on athletic 6'8" wings. To show some shooting, because they don't have, their margin for error is so huge. You know, mm-hmm. like, you look at a guy like with Darius's build, he has to be as good as he is to get away with being his size.
Oh, can we talk about him cooking Marcus Smart?
Like, yes, we
absolutely
can. Yes,
cooking him.
Ooh. And Smart somehow is like trying to say he didn't foul him. Like, what are you talking about? But, you know, like, but Jetty, you know, all he has to do is be okay at shooting, mm-hmm. okay at finishing, okay at creating, and like being a C plus or a B minus at 8 NBA skills is a really useful seventh, eighth man.
Yeah.
At his size. So it's just been fun. He's been easy. He was easy to root for. Then he got hard to root for. You could even sense that the team was getting frustrated with him. The other players on the roster, you could kind of feel that when he kind of freelance. And
Larry was giving him the death stares that are now being directed at CJ McCollum.
Yes.
With a hilarious frequency.
Yes. And him kind of going back to kind of being the guy that everyone's rallying around because he can provide those energy players plays and pick off a pass and take it from end to end to set up an easy bucket for the Cavs or hit a three coming off curl. It's just fun, man. It's just fun. I know we're abusing that word on this podcast, but I can't help it.
No, dude, that is the entire story. The Cavs are fun, right? And even like both Jetty Osman and Kevin Love, like the fact that both of them settled into roles this year and have been positive contributors, like I like those connections to the last era, right? Like I like having those on the roster, and hopefully Kevin Love can come back soon. Was on the bench the last
boy do they games. Need him.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was on the bench the last two games, which I think just his presence in the building caused Al Horford not to play, which sometimes those old wounds heal very, very slowly. But I guess with him being in the building means that he's at least had the negative test, and it's at the cardio/respiratory test phase of returning. That's also unclear.
Based on his Instagram post, I do think like he kind of insinuated he had symptoms, like finally feeling myself again,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So I was
getting him back for Monday would be so huge. And if not,
the second he posted that, my expectation for Kev for the first few games went way down.
It's going to be.
We know what COVID has done to some of these players, and how hard it's been for them to come back when they've had serious symptoms. So I'm just gonna like really gently let Kevin, integrate his way back in. They're doing okay without him.
Yeah.
I hope Laurie's coming back soon too, man. Because like that's the thing. You get those two guys back, all of a sudden, you're not needing to play Denzel Valentine 26 minutes.
You've got a little more juice offensively, and you got some experience.
Their margin for error just really grows.
It really, really does. And I think Laurie Markkanen in particular, it's such a bad timing because I thought he was really finding his footing those last two games, the Phoenix and Charlotte game. But we're getting to that point where, hey, these guys might be returning to the lineup and can help replace what Sexton can bring by committee, right? Like you're not going to have anyone that can really penetrate like Sexton outside of maybe Darius Garland. Even then, right? Like they're doing it in different ways, and having that guy that can just get you a bucket against a set defense is such an advantage. And I mean, this is another great example. Like we will tweet out a bunch of like lineup stats and all sorts of combinations because we find it interesting, but you also have to be really careful because doing something in 16 minutes with Sexton on the bench and having positive results is different than doing it for 48, right? Like you can't just extrapolate those numbers because basketball doesn't work that way. I think that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind. And you know what? Hopefully at the end of this, the Cavs find ways to win without Sexton. You get Garland to be a little more assertive. Maybe Laura gets comfortable. Like guys make progress. And Sexton comes back where people have more of an appreciation of what he does bring to the table, right? Like, I think that this could be a really healthy growing experience, both from the team and also the fan base that I think still has a few too many scars and emotional baggage when it comes to some of these players. Like, I think healing some of those wounds would be one of my hopes for the season.
Well, as we've said, winning cures everything, and right now the team's winning. I think it's going to be really challenging in this upcoming stretch, but man, like if they clear this hurdle, I just even if they go somehow against all odds go 5-7 or 6-6, it's like I just don't even know what I'll do with myself. I keep putting these like barriers up, like to protect my heart.
Yeah, I'm definitely doing that at this point.
Like, this stretch is going to be tough. And if they beat Boston, I'm going to lose my, if they do that, and then they just keep doing it. So like, it's like getting to the point where like, I'm not, while I don't expect this 12 game stretch to go well, like I have this little nugget in the back of my brain that goes, but what if it does?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Like this 12 game stretch looks like hell. And then you look at the previous 12 games and wins over Atlanta, Denver, Clippers, Charlotte, Portland, Toronto, New York, almost beating Washington, beating Boston. Like they have more quality wins this year than I think they've had in the last three already. So that potential is what really excites me. And the reality is, like, Rubio is such a floor raiser. Mobley and Allen are so good defensively that it's going to keep you in a lot of games. And it's something that's tough for teams to adjust to, right? Like, teams don't typically change their game plan in the regular season because you're playing 3-4 games in a week, right? Like, you can't adapt your strategy to the regular season just because one team has weird personnel, right? So they're going to catch teams off guard, and maybe you can steal a game or two here. So I'm really excited for this. I'm a little heartbroken, and I got to break this to the audience. I will be away for this next week. This will be our one podcast for this week.
Sorry, guys.
To peel back the curtain a little bit, life has been a little challenging for me lately, so I am getting a much-needed vacation, redoing my wife's 30th birthday in Cancun. Carter, you will have a podcast with a guest the following weekend to recap this coming week.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I can't even backfill you this week because I'm on the road for work. So sorry, guys. I know this is like the most hype time it is to be a Cavs fan right now. So only giving you a one pod week, I know it sucks, but
it also hurts for me because I want to be talking Cavs. Like I could do this like daily at this point.
Life gets in the way sometimes, guys. So we'll be back to give you all the appropriate coverage, and I'll try to get us some cool guests while Justin's out for next week.
Yeah, so you'll be potting on Sunday. And the nice thing is we have a big stretch of the Cavs actually having 3 days off between Thursday and Monday. So I think you will have a podcast on Sunday heading into that second Brooklyn game. And then I will be back and we will be back together on Thursday recapping those Brooklyn and Phoenix games. So we're actually not missing that many games here. So it might be ideal timing there. But just to loop you guys in and let you know what's going on there.
Yeah, and again just want to thank everyone for listening. You know, we're at 150 plus in the live room. Ooh. Right now on 10 o'clock on a Sunday
on a Browns game day. Hopefully Cleveland can sweep those New England bastards, both with a Browns win as well as a Boston win. Win over Boston on Monday.
You know, we just want to thank everyone for supporting the pod and listening. And, you know, we feel the excitement around this team, just looking at our numbers, looking at the amount of people who are engaging in the chat. And it's really, really fun. You know, we've just, not to tangent too much longer, but like, while the team was really struggling, Justin, we were just like, let's just keep doing it. Let's keep grinding. Let's get the pod as good as we can. Cause once this team's good again, people are going to be ready to flock back. And right now it feels like the beginnings of that. So I know that there's going to be some rough times ahead for this team. It's not always going to be peaches and cream, but right now the excitement is mutual between the fan base, between us, between even within the team, you can tell. So it's just really, really fun.
We got some dogs, Carter. We finally an organic young core that's worth caring about. I could not be more excited. Shouts out to Kobe Altman and shouts out to all of our listeners. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like, subscribe, click the notification bell so that you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, do what we always ask you to do, which is leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.